You are listening to The Morning Magazine for Monday, August 23rd. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, unionized workers for the Nabisco Corporation are on strike in Aurora, along with their colleagues in Portland, Oregon, Chicago, Illinois, and in Richmond, Virginia. Are you familiar with the term Trans Mountain Diversion? You will be after today's water word. And an Afghan translator shares with CityCast Denver what it's been like to watch the collapse of the U.S.-backed government from Colorado. At the bottom of the hour, we'll hear the latest Jim Hightower commentary just after the BBC headlines. And then it's a public affair with Jim Williams of the Community Foundation of Boulder County. As always on Monday morning, it's Counterspin at 9 a.m., a look at fairness and accuracy in reporting, and then it's 2.5 hours of eclectic music with the Morning Sound Alternative. But first, these headlines with KGNU's Jamie Sudler.
A video recording of the shooting suspect at the Boulder King Supers, who allegedly killed 10 in March, will be kept secret and not available to the public, a judge has ruled. Boulder County District Attorney Michael Doherty made the request to the judge to protect the privacy of the victims and assure the defendant's right to a fair trial. The Denver Post reports that the 8-minute recording will be played at the upcoming hearing and was created by the District Attorney's Office to show the movements of the suspect during the shooting. The defendant is scheduled to have a preliminary hearing on September 7th. Some people say keeping the video secret may contradict a new state rule that governs when and how court records can be sealed. Attorney Steve Zansberg, president of the Colorado Freedom of Information Coalition, said that the order is a clear violation of the Colorado Supreme Court's new rule issued this year that governs when judges can suppress court records from public review. The rule requires that judges explain in writing why public access is being restricted. Stan Garnett, the former district attorney, told the Post that the secrecy request is pretty unusual, even though the prosecution is trying to manage pretrial publicity to avoid a biased jury pool. Nevertheless, he said there is a clear First Amendment obligation for all proceedings in a case to be public. Close to 90,000 people in Colorado will lose all unemployment benefits in 2 weeks when federal relief ends, according to state officials. The Colorado Sun reports that there are two programs concluding: pandemic unemployment assistance, which benefited gig workers and the self-employed, and the pandemic emergency unemployment compensation program for those who had exhausted regular claims. In addition, the $300 weekly bonus program to anyone on unemployment will also end. At a press conference on Friday, the director of the state's Division of Unemployment Insurance said that the federal programs will end effectively September 4th. On Thursday, President Joe Biden encouraged states with high unemployment rates to use other federal aid to offer benefits, but state officials here did not indicate any plans to extend them, even though Colorado's unemployment rate is among the highest in the country. After the expiration of federal programs, only those eligible for regular state unemployment will be able to continue requesting a payment each week. State air quality regulators have formally backed off a proposal to require large employers to get their workers away from using single-occupancy cars to commute to work. The Air Quality Control Commission had proposed that companies with more than 100 people come up with programs that promoted carpooling, mass transit, and other ways of getting to work. Similar initiatives have started in dozens of other states and cities. Colorado Newsline reports that the commission encountered intense opposition to the proposal from conservatives and business groups, including the Denver Metro Chamber of Commerce. Now, the commission will promote a voluntary program to reduce the miles driven by residents to their jobs. The air quality commissioners voted 8-1 to abandon requiring employers to come up with a car-limiting plan. Elise Jones, a former Boulder County commissioner, cast the only vote against curtailing the proposed plan. She said her vote was symbolic to register her frustration and disappointment. On Saturday, nearly 200 people gathered in Grand Junction to support the embattled county clerk and recorder, Tina Peters. Peters' office is being investigated for allegations that an election system was allowed to be breached. Those inquiries are being conducted by the Colorado Secretary of State, the Mesa County District Attorney, and the FBI. Jenner Griswold, the Colorado Secretary of State, began investigating the Mesa County Clerk's Office after allegations that there was a security breach during an equipment upgrade. Peters is accused of allowing an unauthorized person into a secure area who then allegedly took photos of passwords on election systems that were later posted on a conspiracy theorist website. Peters is also alleged to have falsely said the person was an employee. According to Colorado Newsline, Peters was noticeably absent at Saturday's rally. However, one speaker read a message he said was from her, thanking her supporters and urging them to press on. Peters has reportedly gone into hiding after speaking at a voter fraud conspiracy event hosted by MyPillow CEO Mike Lindell in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Lindell is a staunch supporter of former President Donald Trump and claims that the 2020 election was rigged without any evidence. In Loveland yesterday, people rallied outside the municipal building to demand that the police change how they respond to mental health situations. The demonstration came after an intellectually disabled man was shot by Loveland police officers last week. The Denver Channel reports that 19-year-old Alexander Domina was injured by police, who said he was armed with a knife and having a mental crisis. According to an attorney for the family, the young man's grandmother had called 911 and said he had broken things but had not hurt anybody and he could be talked down. He became frightened by police and came out with a knife, the attorney said. A man at the rally yesterday said that they were there to create mental health awareness and to speak about what is needed. The Loveland Police Department has placed the officer involved in the shooting on administrative leave while the incident is being investigated. In today's weather, it will be sunny with highs around 90 and a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms tonight. Tomorrow, just about the same, sunny with highs in the low 90s. Right now, it's about 64 along the Front Range. For KGNU, I'm Jamie Sudler.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. Workers at Nabisco Bakeries and Distribution Centers are on strike. The company, which produces internationally recognized snacks like Oreo cookies and Ritz crackers, is currently in negotiations with workers to revamp work hours and create two tiers of health care coverage. Workers at the Portland Bakery walked off the job earlier this month, and colleagues in Chicago and Richmond followed suit, as did workers at sales distribution centers in Addison, Illinois, and Aurora, Colorado. KGNU's Verity Matthews stopped by the picket line and gathered these voices. First, she interviewed Rusty Lewis, who has worked at the Aurora plant for nearly 25 years.
It's been a real struggle here in the past 5 years. We've basically been working without a contract. And we had a one-year extension that they did at the beginning of 2020. That was smart on their part because they were having record profits. And they stripped us of our pension in 2018, treated us really poorly, many times told us we can do what we want. We don't have a contract. So there's a lot of trust issues going on the past 5 years with the company and the members. And we're not even really asking for anything much. We just want a fair contract. Just don't take anything from us. They had record profits last year, like I said, and they've sustained sales this year, and they want to take more from us. They just closed two more U.S. bakeries in the last 2 months. We lost another 1,000 members. Those jobs that are lost and the product is being made in Mexico. So they have two of the biggest state-of-the-art bakery plants in Salinas, Mexico, and Monterrey, Mexico. And that's where the product is coming from now. So we're asking that you check the label and try to buy American if you can. And we just had enough. We want to be treated with a little bit of respect and get a fair contract. That's all we want.
The ongoing negotiations between Nabisco's parent company, Mondelez International, and its workers would determine contract terms for the next 4 years. The company is proposing a 12-hour workday, 3 to 4 days a week, but many workers say they want to maintain a traditional 40-hour work week spread across 5 days. The company is also proposing changes to health care benefits, which unionized workers say will make coverage more expensive for new hires. Workers rallied outside of the Aurora facility Friday, with representatives from unions across Metro Denver joining them. Here's Clifton Horton, president of the Bakery, Confectionery, Tobacco Workers and Grain Millers Union, Local 26, and State Representative Tom Sullivan.
Every day I wake up and I see my fellow brothers and sisters in Chicago, Richmond, and Portland out there walking the line. And until those lines go down, I will be here. I will be there supporting you one way or the other. It wasn't easy to go out on strike, as you guys know. No one wins a strike. But you know what? We can't take it anymore. We're seeing record profits in corporations. We're seeing just corporate greed. Since the 1920s, we have not seen this kind of greed. Now we are working 16 hours, 12 to 16 hours. And then the first thing they tell me is we want a work-life balance for our workers. Fix it. They have the ability to fix that. Yeah. Hire more workers.
Yeah.
I sat here the last few days watching them busing scabs from all over this country, including you security guards. You're scabs too. We were asking for help. My steward would say, hey, can we get help? We can't find nobody. Well, you sure as hell found somebody.
Yeah.
When I see these guys out here every morning, they're coming out here in the morning, you know, they're doing what they got to do. And I commend you and I support you. As your president, I'm very proud of you. I'm proud to be with you guys. I'm proud to be a union member. With that being said, this is what you guys don't know what this support means to them. To come out and see that everybody else, all union brothers and sisters across America, around the world, believe in each other, have the same fight. You're not alone. You are truly not alone.
Now I want to bring up Representative Tom Sullivan to say a few words.
Yeah.
Afternoon, brothers and sisters. As you all know, I am a APW member, have been a card-carrying union member since I was 15, okay? So this is the kind of stuff that we need to do. As a postal worker, we never had the opportunity, or actually, I mean, you don't have the desire, you don't want to go out, but sometimes they force you to do that. And as Cliff was saying, history, we're not going to have history repeat itself. This is the stuff we fought for, you know, back during the Depression era, when it was 6 day a week work. That's what we were doing. We fought for this, and we fought that we would get five day work weeks. We'd get 8 hour days. And the pandemic accentuated a lot of these things. These are the frontline workers.
Yep.
These are the people that are providing the services. You can't do what they do online. You can't do this remotely. They actually have to be here to move ingredients, to move product, to put things on trucks. And that's what we're all talking about. And we've seen, and this isn't the only big corporation of this kind of an item that has their workers out on strike, because they're forcing those people 7 days a week, 12 hours a day, to the point of exhaustion, to the point of their even taking their own lives, because they can't find another way out of this. This is pure greed. They have the ability to pay these people what they need. They have the ability to bring in people. There are people all across this country who are looking for good quality career, you know, paying jobs that will provide for their families. These people have already negotiated this. They need to make sure that the people inside, the people in corporate, stand up for what they have already decided that they can do for people. So thank you so much. We are with you.
Yeah.
Okay. We are not going back. We are not going back to the way things were after the Depression and during the Depression, where guys like this would be bringing their kids with them to work, okay? Because that is the way that things were back then. We have moved forward. We're going to continue to move forward, and we're going to wait, and as long as it takes, to get these people who are inside there to see the light. So thank you, everybody, and fight on.
That was Colorado State Representative Tom Sullivan, BCTGM Local 26 President Clifton Horton, and before them, Aurora Nabisco worker Rusty Lewis. That audio was recorded by Verity Matthews in Aurora. You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. This is Water Words, a fast explanation of a bit of water lingo. I'm Hanley Myers. Today's water word is Trans Mountain Diversion. According to Water Education Colorado, Trans Mountain Diversions, sometimes called Trans Basin Diversions, divert water by drawing it from one stream or river into the watershed of another. So imagine a system of tunnels, ditches, pumps, dams, and reservoirs that are part of a system that moves water from one river basin to another basin for use. These trans-mountain diversions are central to the water systems of some western states. In Colorado, nearly 90% of the population lives on the Front Range, but around 80% of the water originates on the western slope in different river basins. One of the best-known examples of a trans-basin diversion is the Colorado Big Thompson Project, which moves water through the Continental Divide from the upper Colorado River Basin on the west side to the Front Range and Plains on the east side. So if hearing trans-mountain or trans-basin diversion makes you think of infrastructure and engineering that carries water from basin to basin, you've got it right. That's a transbasin or transmountain diversion. You can watch an animated video of this water word explanation on YouTube. Just search for the Water Desk channel. You can also find Water Words, the Water Buffs podcast, and take a deep dive into water issues and news at waterdesk.org. After nearly 20 years and $83 billion, the U.S. war in Afghanistan is finally ending. Last Sunday, Taliban forces swept into Kabul, taking control of the Afghan capital from the U.S.-backed government, jeopardizing the livelihoods of women, and putting the thousands of Afghan civilians who worked with the U.S. and allied forces in an extremely vulnerable position. In this edition of CityCast Denver, host Bree Davies speaks with Aurangzeb Sharifi, an Afghan journalist who worked as an interpreter before eventually finding his way to Denver in 2015.
How have the past few weeks been for you watching this unfold from Colorado?
Past few weeks were very tense and very, very shocking, especially last Sunday was the darkest day of my life. I cried the whole day. We lost our dignity. We lost our flag, the freedom of speech, the basic humanitarian rights. And that was shocking for me. And that was shocking for the people in Afghanistan and Afghans who are living abroad.
I'm so sorry. I can't imagine what that feels like. What do you think people in Denver need to know about what is happening in Afghanistan right now?
The people need to know that the United States government left Afghanistan alone. The people who worked shoulder by shoulder with the United States Armed Forces in Afghanistan, they were left behind.
You yourself were an interpreter for many years back in Afghanistan. Can you talk to us about the work that you did there?
I was working as an interpreter. And besides that, profession-wise, I'm a journalist. And I was working for media as well. So I had double danger. As an interpreter, I've started working with the International Security Assistance Forces, ISAF, in 2003. Then in 2009, I started working as a journalist for the International Security Assistance Forces television, and we were producing some TV spots promoting the government and the Afghan forces. Then I was threatened, and then I've been to India for about 1 year, and then I came back to Afghanistan, and I started working with the United States Armed Forces as an interpreter and cultural advisor, but luckily I was not in the combat operations.
Was there one sort of profession that was more dangerous than the other one?
Yes, being an interpreter was more dangerous than being a television anchor. I was facing the threats whenever I was going from home to work. I was covering my face to make sure that I'm not recognized. I was trying to make sure that nobody knows that I'm working as an interpreter. It was a harsh life.
Why did you decide to go into that?
We had two goals over there. The first, we were thinking that not only me, all the interpreters, we were thinking that, say, the international community and the foreign forces are coming all the way from the other corner of the world and helping us. Why shouldn't we help them? Why shouldn't we give them a hand to help us better? That was the one thing. The second goal that we had is like they were paying a little better than an ordinary job.
Do you know what the situation is for folks who have been in the job that you've been in?
I have started Operation Rescue Afghan Interpreters Facebook page. This Facebook group is created for the purpose of raising the people who are left behind. I am interviewing the interpreters and contractors who are left behind in Afghanistan every night. And I'm asking them the similar question from everyone. Where did they work? What did they face? Were they threatened? And what are the challenges that they are facing right now? And the people are sharing the stories. It's really heartbreaking. The people are panicked and they don't know about their tomorrow. And we are trying to raise their voice and trying to find ways how can we take them out of there. We had a protest on Saturday asking the government that to find an alternative to bring them out of this danger. Because, you know, we don't have time for that long process. We cannot, you know, wait for that long. So we have to find an alternative to bring all those who are left behind over. Or we should take them to a third country to take them out of the danger.
What was the process like for you to get to America?
It's a long process, and I don't really remember, but it took me for about 2 years.
And you were able to bring your immediate family, but not your extended family.
That's right.
How did you come to Colorado, of all places in the world?
We were brought to Albuquerque, New Mexico. My kids were kind of, you know, wondering that if we are really in the United States of America, because what we saw in the United States, it was like New York, Washington, D.C., and California, and beautiful places. When we were brought to Albuquerque, New Mexico, everything was like a desert. It was like worse than some cities of Afghanistan. If you go to Kabul, Kabul is a beautiful city. It's really beautiful. And so when we came there, like we were, everybody was like, you know, they were shocked. And we spent there for about almost 6 months. We decided that we got to go get out of that place because the work was not a lot there. So we were very limited on work. Then one of my friends who was my colleague, he was like, I have heard that you were trying to move from Albuquerque, New Mexico. I was like, yes. Then he was like, why don't you come and see Colorado? I was like, where is Colorado? He was like, it's right behind your head. I was like, okay.
Not that far.
Not that far. Yeah. When I just put that in my GPS, it was 6 hours drive. I was like, let's go ahead. And I talked to some of my friends and we drove here. I liked it. The reason that I like it is it was, you know, it gave me a feeling of Kabul, the mountains. And I've heard about the four seasons and the terrain. I call it terrain, the geography. So everything was, you know, was suitable for me, and it gave me a feeling of home. So since March 2015, I call Colorado home.
We have a lot of community members from places all around the world. Is there a particular part of Denver or Colorado where the Afghan community lives, or are there businesses or restaurants we can support, or any way for people to connect with the Afghan community here in Colorado?
Normally, the Afghans are living in North Denver, Southeast Denver, but mostly the people are living in North Denver a lot. We have another Facebook page called Denver Afghan American Community that I am one of the admins and the creator of this Facebook page. We created it in 2018, and it was for the purpose of keeping our cultural values alive. We are looking for some volunteers to join our page to help the people who are new arrivals, you know, find some volunteers to help them how to teach them how to drive, to help them show places, and whatever we can. I have seen a post today that there will be some refugees brought to Colorado. We will need a huge hand of help for that as well. So I'm asking the Coloradans to come to Denver African American Community page and like that and send us messages how they can help, and we will definitely guide them how to help.
Well, Aurangzeb, thank you so much for joining me today.
You're most welcome, and thank you very much for having me.
You just heard an excerpt from CityCast Denver, the local Denver daily news podcast. Learn more about subscribing to the podcast at denver.citycast.fm or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thanks for tuning in to The Morning Magazine today on KGNU. I've been your host, Shannon Young.